Welcome to Hometown Alaska. I'm your host, Kathleen McCoy. Today, your ears and mine are in for a real treat. We have music producer Kurt Riemann in the studio, and he brought a basket full of tunes from old Alaska. What did Alaska sound like in the 60s, the 70s, the 80s and 90s? If Kurt succeeds, we'll one day have an archive of this music at the University Library available to all. He's on a mission to find all commercial Alaska recordings made over the last 80 years and archive them. Welcome, Kurt. It's a real pleasure to have you and your ears in the studio today. I can't wait to hear what you've got for us.
Thanks for having me.
I'm super glad. And I also want to let people know that they can participate in this show. We're gonna share music. We're going to talk about it. There's stories behind it, funny stories, poignant stories. Mm-hmm. But we also invite our listeners to call in if they know of some music or they want to react to something they hear. We really welcome you to call, or if you've just got a question for Kurt, he can do that too. So it's 550-8433 in Anchorage. And outside of Anchorage, it's 1-888-353-5752. And we also welcome an email, hometown@alaskapublic.org. So we talked. But we want to give a treat right at the top. What do you think?
Sure, yeah.
Because this is all about music, so we decided to jump right into one and then talk a little more about the archive.
Do you want me to set it up a little bit?
Yes, please do.
Okay. In collecting all this music, which we'll get into in a few minutes here, one song in particular came up as ubiquitous. It just shows up in all kinds of recordings.
It's a root music.
It is. It's a very Alaskan piece. So I just put it together in a different kind of way.
Okay. So we're going to listen. Do you want to give them a title?
The Alaska Flag Song.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, let's give it a listen.
Flowers nearby.
Hold up the earth beside the springs, the precious gold of the hills and streams,
the brilliant stars in the northern sky, the Bear, the Dipper, and Shining Heart.
The great North Star with its steady light, o'er land and sea, a beacon bright.
I loved it.
I could have done more than one of those. There's so many versions of that song.
Yeah, so that's just a little mashup you did for us.
Yeah,
today.
And I can tell you who they were, too.
Yes.
The first part of it, sort of the record scratchy thing, it's an old 45 from Douglas, Alaska. I'm not really sure where that's sourced from.
Mm-hmm.
The second one it goes into is Michael McDonald.
Of course,
who's
I recognize that.
Sort of the standard Alaskan version of that. We used to sing at the Fly By Night Club. Then the Alaska Chamber Singers. For the big choral thing, and a small group of people from an LP called Alaska Hit Singles from Juneau.
It's great.
Cut to Matt Hammer and Lauren Arment, and then the big bombastic Gordon Wright piece from Symphony in Ursa Major, the Fairbanks Symphony.
Wow!
And then it went back to the Douglas ladies.
And so this is a thread that's throughout. It's everywhere. You just keep coming upon, here's this version, here's this version.
Yeah.
Everybody wants to do. Do they ever do all three, everything? Do they?
All the verses.
All the verses, yeah.
And you know, I don't think so.
Yeah, everybody loves the first one.
I remember in school having to to stand there. It depended on which side of the 45 they put on that morning. You're standing there, you know, for the Alaska flag and the other one. And it's like, oh, no, they repeat it. And you're standing there for twice as long.
And you don't know the words. Yeah.
No, but I wish I had that record.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, maybe it's out there. You know, let's talk about this archive project, because sure. That's why we're here.
Yeah.
You have a labor of love, a mission. Tell us about your mission to save Alaska music.
Well, I have a recording studio, Surreal Studios, mm-hmm. and I've been doing that since ever. That's basically been my only job. And over time, I've probably done, I think I've counted about 600 albums and had something to do with them in one form or another.
That you personally have yes. produced in your own studios. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. So that's gone through like LPs, and then as technology changed, always cassettes, and then CDs, and now things are just straight online.
Yeah.
But in trying to find some of the older stuff, I remember like, oh yeah, that guy, where's the tape? You know, I'm lucky to have an attic in which I'm able to find a lot of these things, but a bunch of it's gone. You know, and I'll try to find the original artist, and sometimes it's like, oh yeah, that was a great album I did, and I've got like one LP left.
Yeah.
We have no master tapes or anything.
Right.
And this is actually the recorded history. This is a cultural thing up here, and it's disappearing. Now is kind of the time when stuff starts to go away.
And it feels kind of like sand eroding away from, you know.
Yeah.
And it's going to be gone. Once it's gone, you don't get to have it back.
Yeah. And some of these things were such limited releases. Someone might have only put out 100 cassettes or something.
And that's okay. I mean, you want everything you can get your hands on,
right?
Oh, yeah.
I'm looking for all of it. And in over time here, I've been really working on it for about the last 2 years. Seriously putting in a couple hours a day on it. Everyone goes to bed and I'm titling and ripping stuff.
Yeah.
About 1,000 of them. And you can go, there's an online place you can take a look at. There's a website, alaskamusicarchives.com. It's plural, alaskamusicarchives.com. And go in there and take a look. And there's a listing of about 800 and some odd.
Wow.
CDs and cassettes.
Do you know what the oldest thing you have is, by any chance?
That I personally have, I have some 45s from the 60s.
Uh-huh.
There's older recordings than that. I'm aware of some things up in Fairbanks because I worked on digitizing the Native Language Center library, and I found some things there.
Mm-hmm.
But the gems, there's some gems from the 60s. There's in 67, when they were doing the centennial, I think a few pieces were commissioned.
You could tell?
Yeah. you can tell music by committee.
Yes, yeah, yes. You got to get these words into that song.
Right. Yeah. And the thing you find with some of these records is like they're virtually unplayed.
Virgin copies.
Yes. Someone played it one time and it went on a shelf and there it stayed.
Oh my gosh.
Grandma's house.
Yeah. Right now you're in the collecting mode.
Yeah.
And sending out threads and following comments and, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I know I saw, you've also got a Facebook page, Alaska Music Archives, and I see some of the dialogue in there where somebody says, well, my son was in that band. And you're like, well, where is he now?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or stories, you know, like, why is the band called that? These are all things that can be put together in the archive. The main thing right now is just finding the stuff and finding as good a copy as possible.
Yeah.
It started off with my collection, but I've also been in talks with the University of Alaska Library. I'm friends with the dean, and he was interested in the very historical Alaskan aspect of
it. As they would be,
right?
It's part of history.
Right.
Yeah.
And so we're looking for permissions from people to get things put up. Yeah. And some stuff is abandoned, and so it's sort of fair to go ahead and put it on. But we want to put it up on the SLED website, which is sort of Alaska access only. But probably the first thing we're going to be putting on is the Alaska flag songs. Because like he's showing me the site that they have.
It feels almost like public domain.
Yeah.
No, not really?
For fair use, I think almost everybody I've contacted has been like, oh, for God's sake, put it out.
Yes.
Just put it someplace where people can hear it. We worked really hard on that, and no one cares anymore.
Oh, but they do. If they just hear it, then they'll care.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's kind of the first place that stuff's going to go is at the university.
But before anything can go up, you need to reach out and get those permissions. I mean, from individual artists, from... That to me seems like you need a detective.
Yeah. Well, it's certainly time consuming. And well, like, for instance, I was talking to the film group last week, and somebody wanted some Alaskan music, and I had it, and I said, here, try these two pieces, and they wanted to use them in his documentaries about the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta. Uh-huh. But finding the people who did the music, like, I've got your name, you know, Greg West, Orion Ascending, where are you? You get online and you can find where you can buy the music all over the place, but actually finding these people is kind of hard.
Because you need them
yeah,
for
even
the
permission. When you, people put out a CD and they put a web address on the back, mm-hmm. 5 years later,
that, not working.
It doesn't go
404.
Anywhere.
404.
Put your mom's phone number on there instead, you know.
Somebody who really knows where you are.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's great. So that's a really big part of the challenge. Now, you have some pretty interesting stories of where you're getting some of the stuff right now. Like people find it in their attics or they find it in a trunk somewhere. And
oh, yeah.
It ends up in your studio.
Yeah. I mean, and one of them, not necessarily in this, but someone went to a dumpster in Bethel and found about 300 cassettes. You know, someone just thought, like, oh, we need room on our shelf. And they just threw all these out. And I got those to the Native Language Center up in Fairbanks. But stuff just shows up out of nowhere. People come by to digitize something at the studio.
Yeah.
And I'll say, can I make a copy of this? You know, it's a like an Abbott Loop Christian Center album they did in like 1977, and you look at the pictures on it and go like, oh, I know this.
Yeah.
I know those people. I know that place. And in fact, I think the one LP I showed you, I think I now own a pair of microphones.
Right, that you saw hanging in the one black and white photo on the back of the...
That were used in this recording.
Yeah. They somehow ended up with you.
Yeah. A bunch of LPs just showed up too. They were recorded by Gil Daney. And Gil recorded things back in the... I think he started back in the 50s. I got to check on a lot of this stuff. But he did a lot of Festival of Music. Things at West High. I have six in a row recordings of the East High Band, West High Band. I know he recorded me when I was in the West High Choir. Yeah. Yeah.
Did you play an instrument when you were in high school?
No, I sang.
Just sang. Okay. Yeah. Just sang. Yeah.
Yeah. I was in a band. So, yeah. No, I didn't actually play an instrument.
So, okay. Are you a baritone? What are you?
Yeah, a baritone. Today I'm a bass.
The seasoning. Well, you think we should play? Well, let's see. I'm going to throw out our numbers one more time because I think as people hear this, if they've got something, either they want to find out how to get it to you or they just want to know, hey, Kurt, do you know anything about this tune?
Yeah.
Give us a try. So 550-8433 in Anchorage or send us an email at hometown@alaskapublic.org. You know, you're of Anchorage and of Alaska. Let's tell them just briefly that your family was the book cache people.
Yeah. My folks moved up here in the 50s and took over a single bookstore called the Book Cache. And it turned into a pretty big concern.
Oh, yeah.
Where there were 15 stores in town.
I think I saw 19 at one point. Yeah. Eight of them in Anchorage, but 19 around the state. I mean, it was a bunch.
Dozens everywhere, yeah.
They brought books to Alaska.
Yeah. I think the slogan was, that's a lot of books, that's a lot of book caches. It was great. It was like living in the internet for me because you'd go in there, anything you wanted to know was there on a shelf.
Yeah.
And the satellite bookstores, like one would specialize in cookbooks, one would specialize in, you know, history. And
So it was your personal internet.
Yeah. From there, my folks were very encouraging for me to find my own thing. I have three sisters too, and each one of us is like, my parents would say, like, don't do what we did.
We don't want to run the bookstores.
No, yeah. No, you want to do something else. Find what it is.
And yeah.
I picked music, and they went, oh.
Good luck with that. But look at this. I mean, you've had a career in it.
I've been doing it since ever.
Yeah. And the whole studio thing, we had this conversation before the show about you wanted to create a studio so people didn't have to go outside to record their music.
Yeah.
So whatever they were doing outside, you would have the equivalent here.
And musically and equipment-wise, that was important at the time. And we had guy that designed the studio, which we're still in, designed a bunch of studios for Industrial Light and Magic.
Oh, yeah.
So it's an actual studio. And the gear that was in it was the same stuff you would have found if you were doing a rock record in California, because that's where we got it from, was the studio in California that was doing Great White and so forth. So it's been an interesting journey doing rock bands.
And your studio is where you built it today out on, what is it, Dowling, I think?
Yeah, Potter.
Potter. Yeah. I always get that wrong. Yeah. And I've seen it. It's really a cool place. And it's fun to, you know, be on your website and see these young artists coming in and, you know, trying to lay it down.
Oh, it's fun. And I've gotten better at getting it out of people too.
Yeah,
it's a little more mellow. It's not quite as.
I like the twinkly lights and the low lights and the It's just very, very cool. Well, I'm just going to go ahead and welcome a guest on the air. I'd like to welcome Mr. White Keys. How are you?
I'm fabulous. Fabulous. Good to hear Kurt on the air. You know, talk about his parents and you know the first time that we ever recorded with Kurt. Was in his studio,
garage,
in his parents' basement, the basement of their house in like the early 1980s or the late 1970s. And, you know, I mean, Kurt has always been ahead of his time because, you know, he was living in his parents' basement before millennials, before it was cool.
I'm so glad you called.
to remind him of his youth. Well, how about, you've got some stuff in this archive, I would suspect, Mr. Wykes.
Oh, hopefully not.
Well, unfortunately, you're number 18 on our list here.
Oh, number 18.
Number 18. Viva Spinard. Do you remember that one?
Oh, yeah.
Who was on that one?
Oh, man. Boy, that...
I'll tell you.
I think Sourdough was playing drums.
Yep.
And Alice Welling and Ed Bourgeois were singing. And I don't recall who the bass player was on that session.
Might have been Jimmy Wright.
Might have been. Yeah. Might have been. It was about that time period, but... yeah, and you sent me, Kurt, in this collection, I don't know when you came across this, but the official theme song of the Alaska 67 Centennial.
Yeah.
Do we have that? Is that something we're going to play?
Yeah, this is it's number two on our list.
Oh, this is like, I got an accordion that they will to die for.
This is music by committee. This is so good.
Oh, yeah, and you haven't heard anything like this in 50 years. I mean, this is just a gem.
Yeah, well, we got to get some of this music on the air. So should we play Viva Spinard or should we play...
Oh, let's do the official Centennial because it's indistinguishable from Viva Spinard.
Yeah, the Viva Spinard was just a copy of this.
Okay, here we go with the official Centennial music.
There are a great many wonderful states gracing this nation of ours. I've seen them all, both large and small, mountains and fountains and flowers. Some like the hum of the life in the east, others the southland serene.
Some say it's best
way out in the west,
but a land big and grand is commanding the sea.
Talk about music by committee. Tell me what you mean by that.
Oh, you can just tell. I mean, this thing was written. One of the lyricists was Larry Beck.
Oh, I remember Larry Beck.
Yeah. And I don't even remember who wrote any of this stuff. It wasn't recorded up here. They had to go outside to get this done.
Yeah, because you weren't available.
No.
What year was it? So 67? 67,
yeah.
And how would you describe that swing that it has?
Awful.
And, I mean, that's of the time, right? That's what you would have heard wherever there was music by committee.
Yeah, absolutely.
What do you call that? Is that the sound bass or what do you call that? The background?
The rhythm track, the whole thing. There's a few of them that have shown up like that. There's the Glacier Records. There's... a couple of them that have that sort of... We're still trying to find our way.
Yeah.
Like, what's the Alaska sound?
Yeah. So, Mr. Wykes, have you had that classic in your show?
ever?
No. I just became aware of this a month or so ago.
Oh, okay.
Well, I just was wondering what happened to my life before this.
Yeah. But, you know, it's not all like that. I mean, we've got, you've tried to represent every decade. Do you have anything from the 60s you want to play?
Well, that was the 60s there.
Yeah, that's right. that was the big 67.
That represents most of it. I'm sure there's more out there.
You want it. So somebody's got something from the 60s.
It's the 70s that are kind of empty in the collection right now.
Okay. And what would we be, I mean, what are some of the things you're looking for?
Anything that's on a record. Someone just emailed me a picture of a Native group. Two guys did an LP in Bethel.
In the 70s?
I think in the 60s, looking at this thing. Uh-huh. And he sent me this wrecked-looking record, and I thought, oh, I'm so jealous. I really got to hear this thing.
Yeah.
The 70s are a little empty. There was a studio or two here. A guy named Dwight Finger had a place called Alaska Studios, I believe. It was sort of connected to the Pines Club.
Oh, I remember the Pines Club, which is not here anymore. Nope. Up on Lake Otis and Tudor.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he recorded the Abbott Loop Christian Choir, that thing that I was telling you about.
Yes.
There's that one. So that's sort of the extent of the 70s. There's just some stuff. Things sort of broke loose in the 80s. I had my studio going. There were a couple of the studios that were at it. Punk was still finding its way into the mainstream, or just there was a little more of a scene going on, people getting their leathers together and tearing up their shirts in all the right spots.
Yeah. Can you name groups from the 80s?
Two of them in particular. One of them is called the Psychedelic Skeletons,
mm-hmm.
and the other one was Skate Death.
Mm.
And Skate Death, the personnel, in one of those strange moments, I ran into my daughter's second grade teacher, and I said, Kelly, how do I know you? And it dawned on me.
She's from Skate Death.
he's from Skate Death, yeah. He was one of the lead singers in Skate Death, yeah. So
oh
we kept
gosh.
That kind of quiet.
He's got a career now,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, but now he embraces it.
Yeah, he should.
And it was a classic album, too, and people even bootlegged it.
Wow.
They only did 1,000 copies of it, and apparently in Europe or somewhere...
Somebody stole it.
They stole, yeah.
Because it was much loved.
Thousands more copies.
Do we have that one?
Yeah, the song number six.
Number six. And so what is it again? It's
Skate Death was the name of the band, and the song is I Think I'm Elvis.
Oh. Oh man.
Yeah.
That's historical.
Yeah. Well, what I like about bands like that, and what I like about the bands I record now, is they are all about what they're doing.
Right. They're not imitating, they're expressing.
Yeah. They're just having at whatever it is they're having at.
Yeah.
They're not trying to be something else. It's like it's a gang of guys, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And they want to just have a party and
make noise,
make a racket, and they realize, most of these bands realize, like, we may only be together for 18 months or a year or whatever.
Well, I know you were saying a lot of times when it's that kind of group and they're having so much fun just doing this, that sometimes they don't even think about saving it or recording it. You know,
no,
they just play it live and it's gone.
Yeah,
you know. Did you record these guys, the ones we just listened to? So that's probably why
there's even video. There was a scene going on back then, and there was a guy named Frank Harlan.
I remember Frank Harlan.
Yeah, Frank the Clown.
Yes.
And it was Catch 22, the UHF channel, and he was doing music videos, and it was just this subversive kind of feeling down there.
Oh, and he was doing a zine. He had a zine.
Yeah, and opened this album up, because this is one of the last sealed albums. I opened it up, and out falls a magazine. and stickers, right?
Right.
I didn't even know this came with it. And
yeah.
I scanned all that stuff and stuck it in there. Warning. Oh, it was really when this band DOA was up here. It was huge. It was a big deal.
Yes. I got here in 81, so I remember all this stuff. I met Frank, and he was an energetic, energetic, talented guy.
He's really still at it in Seattle.
Is he? Really?
Yeah, he's still.
Wow. You know, one of the things we talked about, because you and I met before the show and chatted a little bit, this idea of people really sounding like themselves, and you become kind of, I don't know, their Zen master, I think you said, you know, to get them to relax and really do this thing. And some of what you told me was really, really awesome.
Yeah. There's certain pre-production things you do. When someone decides they're coming into the studio, it can be a nerve-wracking experience for them.
Mm-hmm.
They won't let on, but there's certain things that happen.
Big moment.
Yeah. And if you know me, you know a lot of the stories that I say about this stuff. And for you to be the best version of yourself, you really just have to accept that you're laying the music out there. You're just going to go in and play it. And you might not believe that the first thing that comes out of your mouth and your guitar is really something that works. But my general experience has been that the first time you sit down and sing something and play it, that you're singing the song and people recognize they're hearing it for the first time, you know, and you're expressing it. You're saying this feeling that you have mm-hmm. for this person or this event that happened, or you're inventing this thing that's going on, and people will follow the story. And as you're singing it the first time, you're describing it almost for the first time yourself. And then the chorus comes and you illuminate things a little bit, and then you go to the next verse and you say something else. The chorus comes again, and suddenly the chorus is about a little more than it was the first time, even though the words are the same. And
it builds.
Yeah, it's this wonderful journey through the woods.
Yeah.
And then, because you're in the studio, you're thinking like, oh, well, I need to really settle down and nail down the
performance.
Now I'm ready. Now I'm going to do it. And the second time, you're reading the map. You're no longer just walking through the woods and saying like, you're saying to yourself like, oh, now I'm going to step over the branch. Now I'm going to go look at the birds. Now I'm doing all this. It doesn't feel the same, you mm-hmm. know, so.
It becomes a little mechanical, too contrived, maybe,
right.
in your mind.
Yeah. There's a state you can get into, you know, where after a lot of takes or after working on the song a bit, you can kind of come back to that beginner's mind.
Yeah.
But I find that the first things that people do, barring mistakes, you know, I mean, you can always fix little things here.
That's
and there.
Why you're there.
Yeah. but I think if you're aware of that process, I think if you're aware that you are really, that music matters.
Yeah.
You know, if you get that sense of importance to what it is you're doing, I think you can kind of give away the nervousness and all that stuff and sort of accept that your performance is a performance of the time. And like I said, you can fix things. You can always make it, you can polish it up a little bit. But they call them records for a reason, you know?
It's a recording.
Yeah, it's a record of the time.
Well, you've become almost like somebody's mentor or priest or rabbi when they're in there. And you just, you know, they hear you kind of have to settle them down. You have a real relationship with them as the producer.
Yeah, and some people are in on the trick, and it's a little harder to work with, you know, getting performances or I want someone to sound like themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And I already know what you sound like. It's like walking, compare myself to a hairdresser. No, you don't really go do your own hair, do you? You know, mm-hmm. it takes someone else standing on the outside to do it. You'd have to take your own head off in order to do your hair, and it becomes impossible.
Yeah.
So my hope is that people become the best version of themselves, but despite their level of experience or knowing what the trick is, you know.
Yeah.
So, like, I don't approach it all the same way.
Right.
If someone with a lot more experience, you're nurturing a different kind of relationship where, for instance, I become the first audience for what it is they're doing. They're really performing for me.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, I have to help them realize, like, I'm not judging what it is they're doing. I'm merely the audience, and I can help guide things. And even if there's an elephant in the room, I'm not someone to say, I was out of tune, do it again, you're pitchy. None of that. You can't say any of that stuff to somebody, you know. It's an artist, and you're working with an artist and how they're supposed to be. You don't want them imitating someone else.
Yeah, that was the thing I wanted to, I was just going to ask you. It's like, this. We talked about how sometimes when you're coming from Alaska, you might think, oh, really, to be good, I have to be out of Portland, or I have to be out of Seattle, or I have to be out of LA, and or I have to sound like something out of there. And a lot of what you sometimes talk to local artists about is being fully themselves and feeling.
I mean, you can go somewhere else and be great. You can go somewhere else and be terrible. You could be great here. There's no reason you couldn't pull something off here.
Yeah.
One of my favorite stories is years ago I went to Nashville and I was on a road trip, so I wanted more music. I go into a record store, CDs and tapes at the time, and I'm looking through national releases, and I look over by the window, and there's this little rack.
And a do-it-yourself.
I go over to it, and it's local music.
Nashville local music. Yeah.
Photocopied covers. They used a little special piece of tape to seal it up. You know, was there people's own particular works of art. But even in Nashville, you have a local music scene. You know, and these are people that want to do what they do. And they don't want to necessarily be monstrously successful, because that's a whole different kind of act.
And I mean, people come in with dreams, or and sometimes just the chance to do something fun. They're not really, they don't have a big career dream out there.
Yeah, trail of breadcrumbs.
So we are going to take a little break, but we have a treat when we come back. Do you want to talk about it before we go, or just tell them?
Very quickly. Yeah. You and I were talking about Talkeetna, and I think I referred to it sort of briefly as the navel of Alaska, which is sort of the center of music. And there's one song in particular, I think, that sort of distills Alaskan music down.
Okay, so we're going to hear that when we come back. Yeah. All right, and so you're listening to Hometown Alaska. This is Kurt Riemann here with me in the studio working on a music archive, and I'm Kathleen McCoy.
You're listening to Hometown Alaska from Alaska Public Media. The program repeats tonight at 8 p.m. on KSKA Anchorage and will not be taking phone calls. You can find Hometown Alaska on iTunes or listen at alaskapublic.org.
Sunrise, it's morning, the East Coast is burning a hole in my heart. And it's making me feel like a part of me is dying tonight. And I just keep thinking of sunsets at midnight, and ships that are sinking, and butterflies, and mosquito bites. Well, that's a quick picture of Talkeetna, I know. But way up in the Northland, that's how the summer goes. Then there's a change in the leaves, and the lake starts to freeze, and feathers fly south on a cold winter breeze.
Wow, what was that? What was the name of that?
That's called Ebling's Waltz, and that's by Larry Zarella, who I think is just one of the greatest musicians from Alaska.
I loved it. And it felt so Alaskan. It felt so Talkeetna, right?
Yeah.
I mean, and is that there an authenticity that you're going after?
Yeah. Larry and a few other people up here, but Larry I consider to be sort of a James Taylor of Alaska, in the sense that it's fully formed, and you can fall right into it and believe what he's singing. And
I was right there. I could practically picture him.
Yeah, and I'm happy to have had something to do with that album. He did it at the studio.
Oh,
and
that's great.
It was sort of a larger production for him. He's just normally a guitar, singing kind of guy, but got a little more into production.
Stepped
with
out.
There. Yeah, and I think that it helps. You know, like I was saying with James Taylor, you don't think of James Taylor's production. You think of how much you liked that song.
Yes.
So I think the same thing of this entire album of Larry's. Is the album's called Stay Alive.
Did he write all the lyrics and everything? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I just want to throw our numbers out just because I'm hoping that we're going to hear from some people that have some music or want to know if you need their music or something like that, or know where there's a cache somewhere that you might not know about. It's 550-8433 in Anchorage, and you can send us an email at hometownatalaskapublic.org. If you're just joining us, that deep voice over there is Kurt Riemann of Serial Studios. He's on a personal mission, and he hopes it's shared. It is shared by people who want to see this music saved so that at some point in time, with a decent database and things like that, you'll be able to search and find Alaska music.
It's an obsession right now with me. I think because of the amount of time it's taking, it's a little bit of a toll on my ability to continue functioning
having
in the
life.
Studio.
Yeah.
We're probably going the nonprofit route with it. So there'll be the ability to have
you need some support. Helping. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, it's a sprawling effort.
Mega project.
Yeah. I mean, there's a video equivalent of it in this place called AMIPA, Alaska Moving Image Preservation Association.
It's at the UAAP Consortium Library, I think. Yeah.
Yeah. It's the same library that would be housing some of this.
Right.
My hope is that much of this would be available to listen to online.
Yeah.
Further, the project has spawned other kind of sub things because as I describe the project to people, they also say like, oh,
this is a good idea.
This is really good because I could X out of it. You know,
I could use it this way.
Well, like the thing with the film group, people wanting some music out of it. It's like, well, I know where the music is. It's in here. You know, that function would be great with the library. The other, aspect of it is being able to put up like a shoutcast radio station of Alaskan music all the time.
Tell people what that is, shoutcast.
Shoutcast is, as I've been exploring it, is a internet radio station. And all rights would be taken care of. And you'd be able to just anywhere on the planet access an Alaskan music station. For me, it's great because before a song, and I've tried this just to see if it worked, you announce a song ahead of time. You would just say, that's Larry Zarella Ebling's Waltz coming up next. And then they'll play it, and you say, that was Larry Zarella Ebling's Waltz. And it's promotional for the artist. People will be able to find the downlink, like, okay, let me go order this thing off of Amazon or whatever.
Yes.
But yeah. I'm all for getting this stuff back out.
Right, right. I'm going to welcome a caller onto the show. Hi, Fred. Welcome to Hometown Alaska.
Hi, I'm hoping that you have something from Goodwin Trent.
Goodwin Trent. He was in, he was in McLeod. I remember that.
That's his middle name.
Yeah. And I don't have any of that with me today. There's 1,000 CDs, so that makes it about 12,000 songs.
Yeah.
And the other one
he did the cover of Rolling Stone and something, the Oil Spill Blues, I think, back when Valdez got black.
Right, yeah. And he was also in the original Last Frontier Band with Doc Schultz.
Yes, right.
You sound like you go back, Fred. You're one of us.
Way back.
Well, you don't have a Goodwin Trent today. You brought about 15 or 20?
Yeah, I brought a bunch of sort of more fairly obscure things. Goodwin, I don't know if he ever was the front person on an album, though. I don't recall him ever putting something out on his own.
No, I don't think so, but he wrote some really good, funny songs about it.
Fred, do you have any of his stuff?
I do have a two-sided cassette tape.
And where does he need to get that so you will have it?
Everybody stay in touch.
How can I get that to you?
Well, email me. Just go to alaskamusicarchives.com. Alaskamusicarchives, plural. Yeah. And because if it's something I don't have, I'll digitize it for free for you. You can get it on MP3 and I'll scan it and we'll get it in the archive and you get it right back. I'm not interested in hanging on to the physical copies of these things. The archive is digital.
That's good to know. So people don't have to relinquish it to you.
They
can just loan it to you briefly.
Thanks, Fred.
Yeah.
Well, he should be in your collection, I think.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well,
that's
a vote. There, you heard it right there on the radio for Goodwin Trent. Let's see. Thanks a lot, Fred. And I'm going to welcome Bill on Hometown Alaska. Hi, Bill.
Hey, this is Guitar Bill, actually out in Squintna.
Oh, hi, Guitar Bill.
Yeah, I wouldn't even call myself celebrity, but it was minor at best. I used to play a lot of the festivals around, and I did the Anchorage Folk Festival a couple times, but it got me thinking, Kurt, I guess we probably know a bunch of the same people, but one in particular was my brother, Eddie Lee, in Sporting Woody's band.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I have one of his albums. He's passed away now, but
yeah.
I think I need to get in touch with you. And you know, I've been around for a while too. I was hanging around Tom Waite up in Talkeetna when the original Talkeetna Travelers got together.
Yeah, I did one of Tom Waite's albums.
Hmm.
Oh well, I'm sure I've heard your name mentioned, and you were probably there. Did you do sound for Talkeetna Bluegrass or any of those other festivals?
Nobody lets me out of the studio. I'm only in the studio.
He's very pale.
I've heard your name for years. We just never have met. I used to know Dusty Parnum and a whole bunch of other people you probably know.
Sporting Woodies, yep.
Well, he can get you that album too by just emailing you.
Email me. I'll make all the arrangements for all these things.
It's great.
Okay, yeah, because I'm sure there's a whole list of people that I can get you in touch with that just should be in the lineup.
Yeah, Eddie's stuff, that'd be great, yeah. I think there's a story somewhere I'll let you know about one of his guitars.
Oh, gosh, well, I could probably tell you some stories, and I can tell you how the Sporting Woodies band got their name, too.
I bet.
It's a lot cleaner than you might think.
We were a little afraid to have that story come on.
No, I'll tell Kurt with the problem.
All right. Okay, you tell Kurt.
Thanks,
Bill, for calling from Squintna. And I'd like to welcome Jim, calling from right here in Anchorage. Hey, Jim. Welcome to Hometown Alaska.
Oh, thank you. During pipeline construction, I worked at Terminal, among other line ride places. But it was we were on a crew change bus waiting to go back and forth to town. And there was a section came on there with his everybody was selling pipeline mementos. And his was an LP record of pipeline songs. And so, God, I had to have that. So I bought that LP, and it was shrink wrapped. And I never did open that thing up and play it because, it came from a Texan. I didn't want to hear Texans playing Alaskan music. So it's someplace in my stuff, and I'm gradually going through it. I found a whole stack of 60s rock, classic rock musicians and stuff I didn't even know I had. So that might be in that pile somewhere.
Yeah. Yeah, it's amazing, like, single albums like that, like shrink-wrapped, that's like a master right there.
Oh, really?
Yeah. The fact that vinyl lasts as long as it lasts, I'm pulling stuff out from the 50s from the Festival of Music, and it's like it was recorded just yesterday.
Wow.
So, yeah, get a hold of me.
How did they find you again?
AlaskaMusicArchives.com. You just go there and send me an email, and I'll...
That's great. Jim, that's great to hear. That's good.
Thank you.
Thanks, Jim.
I hope there's a couple threads there for you. It sounds like it. I got an email here from a fellow named Jim Winchester, who says, Pinky was a dear friend.
Yeah.
This would be Mike McDonald.
Yeah.
I lost my cassette copy of the album. This is the classic reason why people need an archive. I've been wanting to hear Goodbye Summer. He wants to know if you've got a copy of that today.
Goodbye Summer. I actually have those because I also did music distribution at a certain point. We sold to Barnes & Noble and so forth, and a bunch of this stuff just ended up staying
with you
at the studio. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I think I've got a CD that has that on it. So, yeah, email Alaska Music Archives. Yeah. I can get him a copy. The thing about the archives is you know, there will be access to be able to hear some of this stuff. It does come up like, can I get a copy of X? And it's like,
I
can't really.
Not through the archive.
Yeah, I can't really do it like that. I mean, to a certain extent, like me having CDs that I still have, you know, empty CDs, I think it's perfectly legitimate to you know, trade around to get stuff.
Right.
And then putting things in the archive is what I do. But access to the songs, there might be people that are like, no, I don't want that. And in fact, I heard from someone, this woman who did a recording at the studio. And she thought I was putting all the stuff online. She was like, no, don't.
What
no.
do I have to pay you not to get my song online?
I was really in a bad space when I did that song. Like, no, I'm not just
putting voluntary. Stuff up. This is voluntary.
Yeah, I'll be asking.
Yeah, and the artist has to grant permission for it to happen.
Yeah, and in 10 years, you know, she might change her mind about that.
Yeah.
She hears herself objectively, because I didn't mind it. I thought it sounded fine.
Yeah, sometimes your own ears are not your friends.
Yeah.
Well, if you just joined us, Kurt Riemann is with me in the studio. We've just had a batch of callers who either want you to play something that tugs at their heartstrings and their memory strings, or they've got something that they might want to give you. So that was cool that we got some of that. One of my questions was, you know, here we are in Alaska with an incredible Alaska Native tradition. Do you have anything from Alaska Native music? And what can you tell us about that?
It's a very interesting footnote that deserves its own hour of talking. Alaska Native music is technically owned by the people that made it. It's a culturally different sort of approach than we have with making CDs and selling as many as you can. If you write a song and you've created this piece of music, it's bad form for someone to take that and do something else with it.
To commercialize it in a
right.
way.
Right. It belongs to your village. It belongs to your region and all that stuff. And it's an honor for another area to pick your song up and suddenly make it part of what it is they're doing. And
to share.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's a fluid composition, too. Like, sometimes things will get, you know, something else will be incorporated in it somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how it works. If you go to Hawaii, you don't have a hard time finding Hawaiian music. It's everywhere. You know, you can buy it any place you want. In Alaska, you don't really find Alaska Native music. A few recordings have been made. We have one, it was from Eskimo Records. It was number 9.
Do we, number 9?
Yeah.
We should give it a listen.
Yeah.
What do you think?
I mean, everyone will recognize it. This is, yeah.
Now, tell me, where did you get this again?
This is on a 45 that apparently I've had for a long time, and I don't know where it came
from.
Don't
know where
it came from. Other than my attic.
Wow.
I pulled it down. It's a bunch of Alaskan recordings. Because we had the bookstores, the book caches.
Yes, okay.
Some of the stuff would show up, and I hung on to it for whatever reason.
Did you know the village it was from?
It said on its Eskimo Records, Nulakatuk.
Nulakatuk, okay.
And I'm not really sure if that's the name of the song, the area, region, or whatever
it
is. Now, the other thing that happens with Alaska Native music is that the stuff that you hear, the stuff that is really distributed musically on recordings, tends to be sort of Christian music. And this happened to a great extent to the Aleuts, where you can't really find, and they can't really find, any of their historical songs. Most of the other regions, yes. The Aleuts specifically, no, because they were pretty much taken over by seal hunters and the Russians. So mm-hmm. you have this large Russian Orthodox influence in there. So there's Russian Orthodox music. And then, of course, everything that happened to them during the Aleut evacuation mm-hmm. is just
World
a really
too.
Awful
yeah.
thing. I want to play you just a few moments of something. It's sort of one of those little gems you find. This is the St. Jacob's Orthodox Choir, and it's an interesting choice of music that they have. This is just part of one of the larger recordings. But considering all the things that have happened to them...
This is, yeah. See, and you'll understand when you listen to it.
Take a listen. We'll play 30 seconds of this or so.
That is very poignant.
Yeah.
I mean,
and I found that the rest of the CD, it's a copy of something else, but the rest of the CD is just pretty much Russian Orthodox songs. Mm-hmm. I've done several recordings for people up here too. Mm-hmm. Several groups that have done that. St. Jacob's is all over the place now. But that's what happens, you know.
Singing is beautiful. It's just sort of,
yeah,
you know, they've lost theirs and they've adopted another. Yeah, that's, yeah, boy. So I'm going to throw out our numbers one more time just because we may have some people out there that with a recording. And I'm starting to get emails from people saying, do you have Libby Roderick's latest album? Can we hear it? I bet she's in your archive. But give us a call at 550-8433 or an email at hometown@alaskapublic.org. There were a couple other nuggets we wanted to get in here. I'm thinking about, you said that the people who were nuts for the 90s. Is that one we want to try to get in, or what do you think?
Sure, why not? Yeah. Yeah, there's a subsect of people in town that are crazy for what the Anchorage music scene was doing in the 90s.
Describe it. What was it?
It was music. It was when the alternative scene exploded in Seattle. We had our own sort of
echo of it. Or?
Yeah, mm-hmm. I think so. Yeah, mm-hmm. And people just like, I can play guitar and sing.
Yeah,
yeah.
Anybody can do this. Yeah,
you can go get the thing at the Armory.
$25 a night.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll have a party and it'll be over with.
And it'll be our music.
Yeah.
So it got saved, though. Some of it got saved.
Yeah, a bunch of bands recorded. This one in particular, this is called Trauma Groove. It's number 19 on here. Trauma Groove.
That's great.
Yeah, it just gives you a sense of
how that's 90s.
Were.
Oh, yeah.
Felt that's good
90s.
At the
yes,
time.
Yes,
yeah.
Yes, that's great. And the just jiggly, it just kind of just jiggles along.
That's fun. And the thing about history like this, musical history, even if you're doing films, you know, you don't know where things are going. So you just do what you do at the time.
Yeah.
I loved those guys.
Oh, they were
a number of groups back
energetic.
Then. It was just fun.
Yeah. And
know?
People are still fans today.
Yeah.
So there's a trading of the stuff. I mean, you get requests for it and stuff like that.
Yeah, a guy who was in one of the bands just sent me 8 cassettes from
wherever
he came from. I got to get those back to him.
Oh, that's great. I'm gonna welcome Bill from the Valley. Hi, Bill. You're on Hometown Alaska.
Hi, Bill.
Yeah. Hi. Just wanted to let you guys know that song by Goodwin Trent was Department of Snakes.
Oh, right.
Oh.
It was about our Juneau Viper Pit.
Okay. I saw the note was about Department of Snakes, and I thought, oh, maybe this is another group, but it's Goodwin Trent. Okay.
Yeah.
That's great.
And another thing I wanted to mention is a good source would be Pat Fitzgerald and Robin Dale Ford up at Ninth Planet Studios in Fairbanks.
Right.
Would be a good source for a lot of Alaskan music. Alaskan, well, Pat's been in a lot of bands over the years too.
I have a few of theirs. I love those too. They're great. Yeah, we don't really have. I haven't really penetrated Fairbanks, and there's a whole Juno scene. That's gonna be a lot of work.
Yeah.
But yeah, those two areas, those seem to be the spots. I mean, there's stuff that comes from everywhere. I mean, there was a band from Haynes, the Truffles, that was amazing.
Oh,
really, just an incredible recording. I'm just a huge fan of that one thing. They do an album and then they're gone, you know.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
what an album it was.
Yeah, that's great. Let's see. I want to welcome Lauren to Hometown Alaska. Hi, Lauren.
Hi. I was wondering if you know the backstory behind the music for the soundtrack to Spirit of the Wind about George Atla, the movie. And because I know William Ackerman did a lot of the music, but I don't know if there were any Alaskan artists on that soundtrack.
I'm not familiar with it. I don't think there were Alaskan artists. That's been kind of an issue, is that a film group will happen, and then they'll look kind of do a cursory look around up here and say, nah, we don't really have anything, and they might already have an artist. In the case of William Ackerman, I could see them using William Ackerman because it's, you know, William Ackerman,
mm-hmm.
who's you know, certainly a force of nature on his own.
But that's one of the reasons you'd want to have an archive.
Yeah.
When something like that comes up, they don't just scout around quickly. They could actually go into an archive and look
and listen.
Yeah,
they'd be able to look in theory by, like, you know, we need rock, we need folk, we need something about something, and be able to find it.
Yeah.
Thanks, Lauren.
Yeah. Just want to quickly say we got another email about Esther Golton used to live in Talkeetna.
Yes.
Her album Unfinished Houses is amazing, and it was recorded, and they've sent a link to it. Robin Hopper's CD Up on a Mountaintop was mm-hmm. played for me by my English teacher back in middle school. And he sends a link to where you can find those. Also, the Alaska Chamber Singers are always amazing, not to mention Portugal the Man and Lavoie.
Yep.
That's great.
Portugal the Man started off as Anatomy of a Ghost, I think.
Is that right?
Yeah. There's stuff coming out of Palmer that's incredible. I think I've done one of the best albums I've ever done.
Oh, yes.
Year.
You talked about
the band
about
called
that.
The Henchmen. There's not going to be time to play the song.
Okay.
Because it's one of those that you have to play the entire...
All the way through.
All the way through to really get the feeling of it. But these guys, it's three 18-year-olds out of the valley. I don't even think it's... They're together right now. You know, school broke them up.
Yeah.
Once they graduated. But they came in and killed it. They eight songs that were pretty much, you know, I felt like I was witnessing Nirvana.
Wow.
Dealing with a band like
is
that.
Is there any place people can go hear it besides, well, we're waiting for the archive to come together. They didn't have a website.
It's one of those things. I dearly wish there was more I could do about this, you know. I want these guys to have a deal.
You know, our fabulous engineer says we could play it as we go out. Here we go.
The Henchman, yeah. Song called 1, 2, 3.
With me. I want to thank Kurt Riemann for being here as we go out listening to The Henchman from Palmer. Okay, thanks so much, Kurt.
Thank you, Kathleen.
Of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the host and participants and do not reflect the underwriters or KSKA. Learn more about Line 1 and listen online at alaskapublic.org.